The Guardian.
This is Film Weekly. I'm Jason Solomons. On this week's show, I talk to the Tree of Life star Jessica Chastain about working with the enigmatic Terrence Malick and her take on this soaring piece of cinema. From a director of few words to one literally bursting with them, I meet legendary French director Bertrand Tavernier to discuss his new film, The Princess of Montpensier, a passionate romp amongst the 16th century French nobility. Zan Brooks joins me to review Clive Owen and Catherine Keener in David Schwimmer's Trust, Jean-Luc Godard's film Socialism, and Jesse Eisenberg, who relies on the social network of Brooklyn's Hasidic community to deal drugs in Holy Rollers. Yes, it's the high that's 100% kosher. It's Film Weekly. Working with director Terrence Malick is something few actors can claim to have done, although those who have passed before his camera during the five films he's made over the last 38 years talk of a life-changing experience. In Malick's latest, the Palme d'Or-winning The Tree of Life, Jessica Chastain plays the saintly mother to three boys in a small town in 1950s America, while Brad Pitt plays their stern but loving father. Most of her dialogue, however, is spoken in Malick's trademark whispered voiceover, floating over images and memories, or telling bedtime stories to her children.
Who do you love most?
I love you all three the same.
Tell us a story from before we can remember.
Went for a ride in a plane once. It was a graduation present.
It's a remarkable, ethereal performance from Chastain, an actress about to break through with no fewer than six films in the pipeline for this year, including working with Al Pacino, Ralph Fiennes and Helen Mirren, as well as with Malick's original heroine, Sissy Spacek. I spoke to Jessica Chastain from Los Angeles and began by asking her how it felt to be part of a Palme d'Or winning team.
Crazy! Isn't it amazing, Jason? It's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. I never really ever thought that I would be in a film that won the Palme d'Or, even though I had always hoped, because I'm a huge Cannes Film Festival fan. Mm-hmm. But to be in Tree of Life, a Terrence Malick film, with, you know, Sean Penn and Brad Pitt, and to have been there, all of us together, and then to have it be celebrated the way it was, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and I don't know that anything will ever top that.
Yeah, it's a shame because it's right at the beginning of your career, but let's hope that something does top it, or at least matches with it.
Downhill from here.
Yeah, I mean, a little word of warning, it's not all going to be like that, Jessica, I have to say. Presumably, you know, it's not all going to be like working with Terrence Malick. Let's start with Cannes as well, because I mean, that must have been strange, because obviously he's famously reclusive, but we know he was in Cannes with you. Can you give witness? Can you prove to us that he was there?
He was there, and actually, he was there the night that it premiered. He didn't walk the red carpet, but he was there at the end. In fact, the camera, because the camera finds, you know, the filmmaker and the actors, and, you know, during the applause. And at one point, the camera just went to the ground. I was like, what's going on? And then in walks Terry. Which was really surprising to me, because I know how shy he is, and I know it's a lot of energy to take in. It was really sweet, because it showed that he wanted to be there to support us and to thank the festival for presenting our film.
Yeah, I mean, you say, I mean, it is shyness. Can we get that straight? It's not because he's so, you know, he's constructing this kind of mythic persona. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't like cameras.
You know what? What I think it is his job is behind the camera, you know? And as soon as that you're pictured, or there's articles about you and your face is out there a lot, it changes your life a bit, where you go into a restaurant and then people recognize you, and now all of a sudden you're no longer part of the collective and of the group. You've now been separated. And for him, he has this wonderful life. He doesn't live in LA. You know, he has a big family, and he has a lot of friends. And, you know, he gets to have that life. And then also he gets to see humanity from the inside. He gets to see it all from the inside. He's not separated. And so that's a great place to make films as well.
Yeah, well, you're just about to be one of those people that people recognize in the street, I think, with your six films coming up. We'll talk about those in a bit later, but I just want to talk about working with Terrence Malick. Did you know, obviously, that the status he was at, how he worked with his actors before you got to do it? Can you just also tell us on set how you would work with him? Because, you know, much of your dialogue, as we heard in a clip earlier, is whispered, it kind of floats around. How do you actually kind of get the performance over a number of months?
Yeah. Well, a lot about the film is the ways of grace and the way of nature. My character represents the way of grace, while Brad's is the way of nature. And so you have him, Brad's character, lecturing our children on, you know, how to get ahead in this world and how to be a success. And whenever we would film my character telling the boys how to live a life of grace, we found that it wasn't very graceful to tell someone else how to live. So we, Terry... actually realized that it was more powerful for the mother to speak from her soul. And usually a lot of that then is the voiceovers, you know, love everything, everyone. And a lot of what you see, he had written dialogue for. And so we would film it with dialogue, and then he would ask to do a take or many takes, the same speech without the words. I mean, of course, the voiceover I would do in post, some of it, but on set, a lot of the scenes without the words, he wanted me to express how I was feeling without saying it. So I would have to use my body and my eyes and somehow to try to convey the mother's journey as though speaking from my soul rather than my voice, as I guess speaking through the spirit.
Yes, I mean, very much so. At one point, you actually levitate, Jessica. You fly up in the air. I was worried about you.
Do you know, that was an absolute surprise.
Well, it would be.
on a typical Terrence Malick fashion, this is a perfect example of how one works. He was filming the boys in the trees all day, so he had the harnesses. And so I got a call, you know, I was down the street, and he said, you know, I think I would like a shot of your feet walking on the grass and then just being lifted for a second and then being put down. I said, okay, great. So I showed up. It was right before the sun was setting. We had like 4 minutes before the light was gone. And that shot of my feet wasn't quite working. And I was just so happy to be in the harness because I used to be a ballerina and I just I don't know, it was just fun. And so I started swinging around while the camera was going, and Terry just kind of went from there. He said, oh, you know, dance. And so we filmed me dancing in the air. And then, you know, of course, they got rid of the harness in post. And it becomes this moment when the boys' imagination of their mother flying and what that meant.
Yeah, it looks absolutely beautiful. I mean, that's the surprise element of the film, some of the unreal, I suppose, the fantastical, the kind of mythical, spiritual elements of the film. Did you know, though, because your bit is nice and self-contained, basically the 1950s kind of small town America bit, did you know about the now famous segment where he would go off on a metaphysical dinosaur kind of lesson, history of the earth kind of bit?
Yes, it's when I got the script, I got the script after I got the part, and it took me about 4 hours to read it because it's so dense, and I had to pull out my dictionary, especially in that section, to try to figure out what molecule he was talking about or, you know, what was going on. No, as soon as I got to that section of the script, I kind of realized the scope of the film we were making and how it wasn't just a family drama. It's far beyond. I mean, to me, it's such a strange thing because it's the beginning of my career, but I just feel like this film, it's more than a film. It's beyond anything I could have ever imagined to be involved in. It's like a visual poem, and, you know, people that go see it, there's a lot of debate about it, especially about that section in general. But to me, it's the answer of what is death? Because that question's, you know, posed in the beginning of the film, why, if there's something out there, why would you do this to us? And why would you take something from us? Mm-hmm. And the answer is creation and birth, you know? So to me, it's there really is no death. There's just a rebirth of some sort.
Yes.
And it, you know, but there's like that in so much of the film. Like,
yeah, well, there's the bit where you plant the tree and you say the trees keep on growing, and then you say love every leaf, and there's so much in it. I just want to ask, I know that you've got many films coming up, Jessica. You've got Al Pacino, Helen Mirren with The Debt, which I've seen you in, marvelous work you're doing in 1960s Berlin. I thought that was lovely. Ralph Fiennes you've worked with as well. And as well as all that, I noticed you're in a film called The Help with Sissy Spacek. Now, of course, she was one of the original Terrence Malick heroines. She was in Badlands with him in 1973. So when you met her on the set of The Help, did you compare notes with Sissy Spacek?
Because Sissy's married to Jack Fisk, who's Terrence Malick's production designer.
That's right.
And so I met her actually on the set of Tree of Life, and I didn't know she was even there. I got a knock on the door of my wardrobe room, and I answered the door, and there is Sissy, like, hey. And I think the first thing she said to me was, hey, darling. And I just looked at her, and I started crying because I was so unprepared to meet Sissy, who I think is a beautiful actress. And and then we got, of course, to work together in The Help. So we, it's weird. It's like when you work on a Terrence Malick film, you become family. So we're all family now. It's more than just stopping to make a film. Your life doesn't stop when you work with Terry. It keeps going.
Extending that family. Are you in the next one as well, The Burial?
I don't know if I'm in the film, but I went and shot a couple days. You know, I was there about a week and I shot stuff with Ben Affleck. But it was, I mean... who knows if I'm going to be in that film. And it was a great way to go visit the crew and to visit Terry and see everyone again. And, I would do anything in any of Terry's films. I would be, fetching water for people in the crew on his films. For me, he's beyond just a filmmaker now. Like, he's a friend, he's family, and I hope to forever work with him as long as I can.
Well, Jessica Chastain, your performance will live long in the memory in The Tree of Life at any rate, whatever you do next, which is many, many things. And thank you so much for joining us on Film Weekly. I hope to have you back sometime soon.
Oh, thank you so much, Jason.
A huge thanks to Jessica Chastain, and Terrence Malick's extraordinary The Tree of Life is on UK-wide release from Friday the 8th of July. And from The Tree of Life to a pot plant, the wandering soul that is Zan Brooks has made it back from this year's Grass of Wimbledon. Welcome back, Zan.
If I'm a pot plant, how can I be wandering? You've got to kind of think.
It's a kind of feed me Seymour, like kind of thing, like a triffid, right. Like a kind of, you know, okay. what's that musical with the pot plant? Feed Me Seymour. Hope. What, Little Shop
There's
of Horrors?
A Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah,
Jack Nicholson.
Okay. That sort of thing.
All right. Good.
That
okay,
sort of plant is what you
that
are. Is that all right? Venus flytrap of criticism shall now unveil itself. Zan, let's look at The Tree of Life a bit. We'll talk about Trust as well, directed by David Schwimmer. Holy Rollers is out, starring Jesse Eisenberg. We'll talk about that. And also, we'll talk about Huge. We had Johnny Harris on the show last week. We'll just talk about his film, Ben Miller's debut, Huge. But we'll start with A Tree of Life. Just heard from the floaty Jessica Chastain there. She seems exactly the sort of person that would work with Terrence Malick, ethereal, aerial alike. It's that sort of film.
It is. It's a collage and a rapture and a meditation.
Yeah,
and a muse.
We saw it in Cannes.
We did.
Together.
Yeah.
I've seen it again. Have
yeah.
you had
yeah,
that
I have,
pleasure?
Yeah.
What do you get out of it second time? Because I think it's quite interesting.
I liked it just as much, and I worried that I wouldn't. Mm. I worried that the sort of spell that it casts would dissipate when you kind of know what's coming.
Yeah.
It's so much a film that you immerse yourself in. And actually, I feared that it might not work the second time. Lightning wouldn't strike twice. But I adore it. I think it's a masterpiece.
Yeah, there's a richness that emerges the second time because you sort of know slightly where you're going.
Yes.
That feeling of being lost and sort of floating and trying to clutch at the reeds of this cinematic flow is lost in the second viewing. But actually, the sort of certainties of its narrative, which are very few and far between, but there are sort of rafts of narrative that
Yes, there are.
To.
There are.
And it's very much a film that's reflective, it seems to
it's
me.
It's reflective,
rather than
and it is
what
a,
I saw the first time.
A great balance, which maybe you're kind of more aware of the second time, of how masterfully he manages and maintains that balance of the kind of intimate drama with this great kind of infinite canvas of life, the universe, and the meaning of it all.
Right. Is I'm going to throw something at you,
and
I don't know where I stand on it, and
yeah.
that's why I'm asking you. Is that bit, that famous bit, 20 minutes in, it lasts about 17 minutes, I timed it this time,
right?
Where he talks about, where he just shows geezers and molecules and protozoa and bacteria and dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Isn't it a bit silly?
Yeah, I think it is. I think that the film risks being wildly silly, wildly hubristic, grandiloquent, all of those things. And yet I kind of applaud him for doing it. You know, there's this whole talk about auteurs, the auteurs of cinema, and mostly they've now gone. Certainly they've gone in terms of putting it on a big canvas like this. This is an absolute kind of personal, heartfelt, spiritual film.
Yeah.
Maybe he's a Christian, that's fine. I mean, although, you know, obviously the message of Christianity is undercut, or at least kind of complicated by this sort of Darwinist view of the birth of the cosmos.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I believe in God.
Is it creationist? Is it Darwinist?
Well, I think it's Malikian, isn't it?
He's the God in this universe.
He is. And that is the thing about all great films, have a kind of godlike hubris to them, and that they create a world. And there's some cartoon I remember seeing ages ago where God is holding a press conference and he's saying, "What I'd like to do now is direct." And that is what Malik's kind of doing here. And I don't necessarily believe in God, but I do believe in Malik.
Is that a New Yorker cartoon?
I think it probably is, isn't it?
It should be, if it isn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Talking of strange kind of coincidences and joining the dots, the cast of Friends, it strikes me, have been struggling really ever since they kind of left Friends. Jennifer Aniston's had a few hits, but Trust, directed by David Schwimmer, may just be the best thing that's ever come out of Friends.
Who are you talking to?
I'm chatting, Dad. My friend Charlie from California. He's a junior and plays volleyball for his high school.
Oh, a junior. Well, he's obviously a very smart kid. LOL. Laugh out loud, right?
Nice one, Dad.
Proms.
Parent watching over my shoulder.
And what is that?
Laughing my ass off, me too. No, wait. Dad, can you go talk to Mom about mortgage payments or something?
All right. Good night, Beth. There you go.
Night, love you.
Whom do we trust? Do we trust the authorities to track down our internet perverts? Do we trust our dad to be there comforting us ever? This is Clive Owen and Catherine Keener as the parents, looking after their young daughter who's been groomed on the internet by a pervert. Zan, what did you make of this family drama?
Well, I think we have to trust David Schwimmer, which is something that I would previously have been very wary of doing it. He was always, I didn't really like any of the Friends, but I think he was the one that I disliked the most. And then, of course, he went on to make Run, Fat Boy, Run, yeah, which I didn't like either. And yet he actually does a very good job with
this.
Doesn't he? It's, you know, at times, it's a sort of well-meaning film, and at times the sort of the heavy hand of good intentions is a bit too sort of obvious on the tiller. But how are you going to handle this? You know, you could go too much one way and it's horribly exploitative, go too much the other way and it's this sort of awful, preachy film. And he, by and large, goes sort of down the middle
and keeps
it honest.
Yes, I do, because it can either be sort of public information film, yeah, watch out, there's perverts about. But I thought the performance of the newcomer, the girl,
Liana Liberato.
Liana Liberato. Great name. But yet her performance was full of innocence. I mean, that name smacks of stage.
Expressive Liberace, doesn't it? And imagine what he'd have done with that role.
I thought she was lovely, really good in it. I mean,
she was great. Yeah, because it's you know, she's not purely the sacrificial victim, even though she is obviously an innocent. It does make a good show of capturing the sort of terrible tumult of emotions of a teenager and the betrayal and the terrible aftermath of what happens. And Liana Liberato does make her utterly believable as a character, as in fact does Clive Owen as the sort of ad executive dad who worries that he is sort of complicit in this culture of sexualizing tweens because he, you know, he's doing this kind of, I guess, slightly American Apparel style clothing campaign. All of that could have felt sort of shoehorned in as the issues, but it's navigated really well.
Just about gets away with it. I mean, it is a little bit obvious in its signposting. Maybe a more experienced director might have kind of smoothed its way, but I think his atmosphere change is really good from the sort of warmth of the family beforehand to the kind of cold colours he uses after.
Yeah, and it's really about the aftermath of it as opposed to the build-up. And the aftermath is probably the most interesting issue in terms of what it says about us as a culture and how we cope with this and resolve these tensions.
I thought Clive Owen was rather better than he's been of late as well, isn't it?
He's one of these actors who, in the right role, is great, and in the wrong role, is as wooden as a plank.
King Arthur.
Yeah. And here, his sort of stoic kind of rage boiling is very well communicated. So, yeah, it's a good performance by him and Catherine Keener, who is always great as the mum.
Exactly. That's Trust, directed by David Schwimmer. Yes, Ross from Friends. Jesse Eisenberg, he's hot right now. Straight off the back of his Oscar nomination for The Social Network, here he is as a Hasidic Jew meeting his wife-to-be.
Will you study at the Kollel?
Yes, well, I work in Manhattan now. I'm not sure about becoming a rabbi yet.
You like playing basketball more?
You see me?
No, no. No.
No. My tata will talk to the rabbi. They will decide for me. What job do you do?
I take care of my younger brothers and sisters.
Oh, that's nice.
How many children?
Five?
No, I want eight.
Eight?
Baruch Hashem.
Baruch Hashem.
Scared, perhaps, by that proposition, he relies on the social network of the Brooklyn Hasidic Jewish community to become drug runners in the film Holy Rollers. Zan, this is an extraordinary real-life tale.
Yeah, it's always the ones you least suspect, isn't it? which I guess was the point. He says at one stage, act normal and look Jewish.
That's what and I try is, and do. I think like, I manage it.
You do it pretty
Thank
well.
You. It's the normal. I have
yeah,
problem acting.
They're going to frisk you at customs.
I love it.
And this is supposedly based on a true story in the 1990s of Hasidic Jews smuggling copious amounts of ecstasy back from Amsterdam to New Amsterdam, I suppose. and, you know, it's a great story. It's a sensational story. I'm not quite sure it quite worked for me.
When I heard about it, when it was at Sundance, I think it was 2 years ago, it was like, did you hear the one about the Hasidic drug smugglers? And I thought, brilliant, this is hilarious. It's going to be like the Hebrew
you
Hammer.
Think
without
a sort of absurd black comedy.
Yeah.
And it's kind of not.
It's not that funny.
It's not that funny, but it's not that thrilling either. And it's not even a great character study, even though Eisenberg is always good at playing these sort of naive but ambitious sort of little boy men.
Yeah.
He's the sort of Jewish John Boy Walton, isn't he?
It's quite simple. I mean, obviously, it's being sold off the back of his performance as Mark Zuckerberg. I thought he was really good at it as Mark Zuckerberg. Then I've seen him
great.
In this, and I thought it was quite similar. Then I met him, and he was quite similar in real life too. Nevertheless, that's kind of okay if you give him the right roles, as we discussed earlier with Clive Owen. Sometimes he's good, sometimes he's bad. Jesse Eisenberg here, I mean, it works, that kind of drawn-in neurosis, if you like.
Yes,
it does.
Trying to kind
of see the world.
The problem I had was it sticks very kind of closely to what has become the template for these sort of drug gangster movies where you're sort of dazzled by it, and then, oh, there's a cautionary message because it's not all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's nightclubs and gangsters, moles and money. But, you know, you could get into trouble by going too
deep. What is different? Because you say it's one of those drug dealer films where you don't get high on your own supply. But normally with these Hasidic kind of films, you have the outsider coming in, the Kelly McGillis character being sucked into the world, and can she fall in love with the rabbi? No, because they won't let her in. This is actually because it's about someone who wants to get out. Which I thought was a different dynamic that's been added to that, except it becomes more about a drug-dealing film than it does about the Hasidic drama.
It does, and neither world quite had enough texture. So it felt like based on a true story. It felt like someone had read a magazine article on this and thought, oh, I can write a script off the back of that because that's a great idea, which is fine, but then it still feels like a sort of second- or third-hand anecdote based on something real.
Yeah.
And so therefore it's hard to get too close to it. It's hard to kind of believe in it.
Its tone wasn't quite there. It wasn't quite as sprightly as it needed to be. That said, I thought it was still a very interesting story.
Yeah.
It kind of works quite well. Jesse Eisenberg is in it. Strange week. Terrence Malick is back, actually, in a re-release last year in Marion Bad is back. But also we have Jean-Luc Godard. We have Terrence Malick and Jean-Luc Godard on the big screen this week. It's an auteur's paradise. Jean-Luc Godard back with film socialism.
I think they should do a buddy movie together.
It would be great, wouldn't it?
They
could both
drive
not turn
across
up.
America.
Here's a film. It'd be like Waiting for Godard and for neither of them turn up at Cannes.
No.
Let's see if you're slightly more attuned to Godard after watching Film Socialism. I don't even want to tell you what the hook is because it really doesn't make much sense. But I don't think sense is what he wants to make, Jean-Luc Godard.
No, I don't think it is. I think quite the opposite. This is, you know, there's a bit on a cruise ship with Patti Smith,
yes,
who says things
around.
Like knife and art, war, There's a bit in a petrol station. There's a montage around the Middle East. The subtitles come in what they call Navajo English, or what he calls Navajo English, which I think strips out the verbs, and you get this sort of semiotic sloganeering that doesn't make any sense.
Well, it sort of makes sense, because I can speak French, so I can understand what they're saying.
Oh, good on you, good on you.
Well, it doesn't really help.
Well, he's speaking to you.
Well, you're all right, because you can speak French. I was like, it doesn't really help. It doesn't make any more sense.
Right, okay.
The subtitle, the full translation is available online. If you go to Film Socialism, Google it. There is a full transcript of it all into English translated. Right. But again, I did that. It's not really going
to
help you.
He's not trying to make sense, though, is he?
No, I think the point is that language is sort of corrupted or useless in some kind of way.
So why make a film?
Well, what do you think?
Well, I think it's the work of a sour, disillusioned man who is being deliberately obscure. And if it's a film about socialism, isn't socialism about, you know, treating each other as equals?
All in it together.
Spire de corps and all that. This is a sort of repudiation of the world, and it's saying, screw you, I think.
No comment is the final
No comment, yeah, exactly. That's what he bows out with. You know, I'm very sorry for spoiling the ending of this film, but the last image is a cue card saying no comment.
Yeah.
That's great, isn't it? I mean,
I kind of like this film.
Yeah, I know you did. I hated it. I thought
it's there
awful.
To be hated, and I kind of like in the kind of like that you love the Terrence Malick. Look at me with my David Attenborough dinosaurs business. I kind of like the kind of fuck youism of film socialism.
I've no problem with fuck youism in film, but you've got to kind of speak to people at least a bit even if it is to say fuck you. He doesn't even quite say that.
Well, don't you think the llama at the petrol station had everything to say?
No, I don't think that had anything to say. I don't think this film had anything.
I wasn't sure. I watched it again the second time. I was like, the first time I loved it, I was like, it looks great. I love the distortion of the sounds, the images. I like the kind of design of the text and the kind of the quotes that it comes up with. Second time around, I was like, you really haven't got anything to say.
Well, we've got you know, this week we've got good auteur, bad auteur. I applaud the people being allowed to make exactly the film that they want. I just wish that Godard hadn't made this one.
Film Socialism, a lesson at least for us all. Huge thanks to Zan Brooks there, and for all of Zan's reviews and tennis reports. Go to the best film site on the web, guardian.co.uk/film. The historical drama never really goes out of fashion. A staple of British and American cinema, it's also something the French do rather well, if not better, with less pomp than the Brits and less piety than the Americans. Bertrand Tavernier's The Princess of Montpensier is a seductive and swooping adaptation of a little-known short story by the 17th century French author Madame de Lafayette. The story entwines religious and sexual rivalries as, against a background of Catholic and Protestant warfare, the arranged marriage of the beautiful Marie de Mézières, played by rising star Mélanie Thierry, triggers a violent struggle between her first love, the rakish Henri de Guise, played by Gaspard Ulliel, and her soon-to-be husband, Philippe, the said Prince of Montpensier. I met up with Bertrand Tavernier, director of classics including Round Midnight, Life for Nothing But, Coup de Torchon and Laissez-Passer, to discuss his new film. But first, let's hear Mélanie Thierry and Gaspard Ulliel in action in 16th century France.
Promis.
Tu n'as rien promis à mon frère.
Ah non, lui non. Rien promis. Donné. Une gifle.
Donc tu ne tiens à lui d'aucune manière.
Je tiens à lui parce qu'il tient à vous, Henri. Et que vous ne serez jamais loin l'un de l'autre. Donc moi de vous.
Bertrand Tavernier, a great pleasure to welcome you on Film Weekly again. The last time was for your Tommy Lee Jones film, which was not quite to your own liking. But I hope with The Princesse de Montpensier you have a complete control and you're pleased with the result.
The film, as it was shown in France, in Spain, in Switzerland, in Belgium, and on Cinémoi, was the film, Electric Mist, was the film which was to my liking. It's just that the print release by DVD by the British distributor was not my print. But the film, I love the film.
Well, The Princess of Montpellier, I found a thrilling experience, and I hope you like the use of that adjective, because to me, even though I'm familiar with the works of Madame Lafayette and Princesse de Clèves, which was a work I studied at university, this was another work of hers. But to me, this was as if I was watching Sex in the City with Sarah Jessica Parker talking about her relationships and her clothes and the modern Manhattan. It felt to me that I was inhabiting a modern world with your young cast.
Thank you. I love that. I wanted to film those emotions, this love story, very romantic and passionate love story, not as if it was something happening in the past, but as if it was happening under our own eyes now, as if the camera had just been invented. I was not filming something historical. The characters did not know they were historical. Yes. I kept repeating that to the director. You do not know that you are 16th character century. It's people after you who will go. But now you are people who are as present, are contemporary as a rock star today. Mm-hmm.
Is that a different approach to the when you've done period films before? And I'm thinking of even films like Laissez Passer and
It's the same thing. I'm always approaching the period film as not as an historian. Even if I want the behavior to be true, even I want to be the gesture, the action to be true, I always want to film that with a kind of contemporary eye. Mm. I don't want to capture the look of a period. I want to capture the soul of the period. I want to be inspired by the behavior of the characters. And it's the same in Safe Conduct and Here. They are young. They have to survive. So they move fast. They move fast because of, in Safe Conduct, of the cold, because of the pressure, because they have to do films with very little stock in poor condition. Here, they move fast because they are young, they are eager to love, to fight, to succeed, and they are... So I want to film that, not as it was something that we were looking like... I am sinking to a long forgotten past, but as if it was something happening just now.
Because I may be wrong, but it seems to me that one of the youngest cast you've ever worked with.
That was the challenge. That was, I just had a film where the hero was Tommy Lee Jones, somebody with a certain age, and suddenly I was confronted with people who were in their 20s. And they were playing characters who were, all of them were in the early 20s. And this is specified by Madame de Lafayette. All the characters were very young. I mean, the Duke of Anjou was general-in-chief of the Catholic army at 17. So, but 17 in 1567, it's not 17 today. 17, you must have 4 or 5 years in order to... You cannot have somebody of 17 today to play. But he must think in his head that he's 17. Mm-hmm. He must know that... that was giving a complete different approach to the emotion of the film. That was a challenge, and I adore working with all those young actors.
Mm-hmm. Did it give you... like Melanie Thierry tells me that you were the most energetic of the lot, that you were the last to bed and the first up, and you were drinking and eating more than them and partying more than them. Did they give you an extra energy? Are you, if I may say, you're not in your the first flush of youth?
I love what Melanie said about me, except drinking. I try not to drink when I'm shooting. I try to be... To pay attention to the food, but it's true that I'm the first on the set. This is my life. I am fulfilling my the dream I had when I was 13. So I have to be grateful to that. I'm living a wonderful life, and I cannot be condescending and arriving late, and I have to be passionate. Jean Ranche, my screenwriter of a lot of my first film, wrote in his book of memoir that the first quality of a film director was to create with all his collaborators the desire to astonish him, to surprise him. And it's something which I love to do. And he was adding, the best scene I've ever wrote in my life when I wanted to astonish Pierre Bost, who was his partner, or Bertrand Tavernier. Then I was becoming inspired. Mm-hmm. I want to create with the actors the desire to please me, to surprise me, and I want me to do the same. And that was very, very, very exciting. I mean, Lambert was terrific.
Yes.
Lambert was a delight to work with. And all those actors were all competing. Who would be the best? Who would be the more demanding, but creating the least problems, mm-hmm. but always challenging.
And your lead actress, Melanie Thierry, she's charming, I have to say.
She's more than charming. She's stunningly beautiful. She has the complexion of the woman painted in those days by Clouet. Mm-hmm. I mean, a big forehead, those eyes a little apart, the cheekbones, beautiful breast, beautiful. But she's a stunning actress.
A huge thanks, and I think a cold shower for Bertrand Tavernier there. The Princess of Montpensier is on UK release from 8th of July. Many reasons to see it. That's all for this week. The music we've been featuring on the show this week is taken from Alexandre Desplat's beautiful score to Terence Malick's The Tree of Life. For now, from me, Jason Solomons, and Film Weekly producer Jason Phipps, it's goodbye and thanks for listening.
Great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.